is Brock and Salk.
I don't read the internet, guys.
Take the bull by the hands.
On Seattle Sports.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
And Brooke Wire, you are. And Brooke, you are.
Styled by Simply Seattle.
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Salk.
Let the fire!
All right, hey, we're going to talk to Mark Domenech coming up in 30 minutes, former head coach or former general manager with the Tampa Bay Bucks. And if I remember right, kind of friend of Schneider, right? Mm-hmm. So usually some great insight. We haven't talked to Mark in forever, which is too bad because he's an awesome guest and I've always enjoyed chatting with him. And so, Brock, thanks for setting that up for today. He'll join us here in 30 minutes. I don't know how much he knows about Mike McDonald in particular, but we learned a little bit more about him yesterday as John Boyle, Seahawks.com, and fantastic person, fantastic writer, just awesome.
Great letters, like great hair.
Great hair. Yeah, great I would agree with that. Just all around good dude. Anyway, Boyle wrote a good article here where he has got some of these quotes from McDonald and what he had to say at the coaching clinic. And two really jumped out to me, Brock, that I wanted to read to you. The first is this. On defensive fronts and pass rush, McDonald noted that, for the most part, he isn't interested in moving linemen around for the sake of dressing things up. At the high school level, he noted, there can be more value in doing that when there are more physical mismatches to compensate for from week to week. But in the NFL, where every team has top talent, McDonald has a different goal in mind for his defensive front, one that, if executed right, can set the tone for an entire team. Quote, "We believe in knocking the crap out of the guy in front of you, and then some," he said. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That.
Yeah.
That.
Yeah, that knockback.
That.
Knockback. I love that word. I don't use it enough on my broadcast. Mm-hmm. I need to do a better job of that. I need to get that one ingrained in my brain, like the Revenge of the Nerds rap, because that's a good one. Not physicality, but knockback. Just taking that man and moving him against his will, both offensively and defensively. So, you know, as that comes up, you started the show an hour ago. You wrote about it last week. That is, in this draft, that's Jared Verse.
Yep.
That dude's got, he's a bully. He is, you know, Terrell Suggs. He's got that kind of punch. That kind of, you don't rep, I mean, it's a good thing we're not doing a bench off. You know, it's just you and Moore running the 220. Because if you or me or Justin had to try to rep 225 pounds.
Today?
Today.
No.
I mean, it would be painful. It would be, there'd be some real, like, oh, it'd be hard to get up one or two reps for me, you know. 31 times. That is just a, that is a, that's a unique kind of punch. And when you have that, Salt, guess what you can do? You can knock people off the ball. So not getting real cute. Maybe, you know, you compare then, okay, do you want Latu? Well, Latu can move all over the field and he can play inside in nickel and he can move out. And are they still not going to do some of that in nickel? Absolutely. They're going to be creative and you will absolutely put your best rushers out there and you'll move some people around in nickel. But I think what he's talking about is the foundation. As Joel Klatt said, the foundation is to build a run wall. And to build a run wall, you've got to have dudes that can knock people back and not get just... Remember 2 years ago trying to run that bear front? Oh.
I mean, I remember you talking a lot about it, that's for sure.
And, well, and KJ talking about it too. Man can't do his job. Linebacker can't do anything when you got people just getting washed in you like an ocean shore's tide. Like it ain't happening. So, yeah, I'm with you, man. I like that as well. That's a foundation. Knock them back and build that wall.
All right, here's the other one. And by the way, that's another, as I took it the same way, like Jared Verse, yes. Is that also Byron Murphy?
He got a lot of power, too. Yeah, he's got ability to hold his point, and that's a lot of Tavondre Sweat. I mean, when we talk about 365 pounds that resets that tug of war in that line of scrimmage, old Tavondre can do some of that as well.
All right, here's the other one. This is on hiring his coaching staff, which is a really interesting thing, right? You talked about this yesterday, Farrell Brown's comments that he really liked. And I thought that was nice, the way Farrell Brown said. He liked that McDonald did not just go to the old boys club, did not just go to his buddies. He hired all new people that he'd never worked with before.
You know, I'll let you read this quote because you know what else I thought about with that further is, you know, when players are perceptive in that way. Like, I'm fighting for my livelihood, right? I mean, it is a competitive dog eat dog, and you guys pick the best available, right? Based on our performance and everything else. And you know how frustrating it was as a player at times where you look at a coaching staff and you're like, you're not reciprocating. You're just taking care of your boys. You're just taking care of the good old, like, you're not doing the same. you haven't surrounded yourself with the best of the best, right? You ask that of us in this locker room to compete and be the best of the best and let the, you know, best stand at the end of this thing. Well, you didn't do that as a staff many times because you just hired friends that you were loyal to or that got you a job and they scratch your back and you need to scratch theirs. Yeah, that can be a bad, bad start to a locker room. This sure feels like the inverse, which is pretty cool.
All right, so here's what he says on how he hired coaches. I love guys who love football, man, he said. We do a lot of football. With coaches, what I wanted to hear when we were interviewing guys was, when we turned the tape on, oh man, this was awesome. We had this one problem, but we thought about the problem in a new way, and what happened was, ... You can hear the excitement. You want that type of mentality of guys that love ball, and I thought that was something that popped with the guys we ended up hiring. It's interesting, and it fits to me with the Farrell Brown comments, with looking for different groups of people, not just the same old, and also looking for guys that just want to like get dirty together, rather than, as you've said, Brock, the coaches or scouts that have the tendency to only look at the downside of everything, rather than being like, yeah, this is one of those plays where this went wrong and the tackle didn't know what he was doing.
Yeah. We weren't good enough here. Just not good enough there. It's just our personnel isn't their personnel. And we just can't do it.
You want that excitement. You want that almost the incubator, right? Mm-hmm. And I think about that coaching staff in Washington a few years ago, the one that had Shanahan and McVay and all those other guys there, and how it must have felt like an incubator. Right, like they have down in Silicon Valley, right, where you get a bunch of people together that are all smart and they're talking about the same types of big problems and they're working together and they're coding all night. And the next thing you know, they invent Uber or whatever the heck it is that comes out of it. I think that's what they're looking for, right, is to be one of those incubation type of places where coaches are excited about what they're doing, going back and forth and making each other better. I like that. I like the thought behind it.
Yeah, you don't even have to think about it. Go listen to that podcast. Honestly, I know Scott Service loves it, and it's been out for a few years over there with The Athletic and what's it called more? The Playmakers podcast with Shanahan and McVay and LaFleur and Mike McDaniel. That's exactly what it is. They talk about that exactly, and it was so hyper-competitive because of that. Like, hey, man, and Mike McDaniels goes to be an assistant O-line coach because he's like, this is my edge. This is where I can incubate. This is where I can grow my game and not just look at it through the QB's lens. Help me understand I need to grow, you know, this aspect. And if I could do it at the line of scrimmage and have all that background, all that code on top of my QB code, on top of my passing game code, guess what I become? Pretty lethal. Mm-hmm. Pretty lethal to deal with. And yes, I think that is why in the interview process you heard Mike McDonald compared to who? The Sean McVay of the offense. You know, of the defense. Like, he's the Sean McVay of the defense. Like, this is what he wants. Old Jim Harbaugh's kooky, man. He's his own little world. He's got his own tattoo now on his deltoid, too, 15-0. Paid off his bets and was a man of his word. But you know what that guy loves? Ball. You know what he and Greg Roman and their RVs are doing down by the river in L.A.? Talking ball into the early hours of.
Gotta like that. And
yes, you do.
Gotta like it. All right. Sure. I texted with Matt Miller. Here's what I got. Nice. I said, if Jaxon Smith-Njigba were in this draft, where would you have him? His answer. He was wide receiver 1 for me last year, would be wide receiver 4 at best this season. Okay. I think we can all accept that. Mm-hmm. I said, first round still. Yeah. Probably drafted in the same range. So, okay, that makes me feel a little bit better.
Okay, good. Good.
I mean, so I still think in retrospect that going with 2 skill position guys in the first round plus a running back in the second round and apparently, at least for now, whiffing on the one defensive end that you got is just not the way to spend 4 picks in the first 2 rounds. But that does make me feel a little bit better.
Oh, good. I'm glad. Different body type, right? Different than these guys. And Thomas, it'll probably be the 4th one draft. I mean, they're all a little bit longer, all a little bit bigger, all a little bit faster than Jackson. But, yeah, his playmaking, and we watched it, Salk. You saw it with your own eyes. And we had an expert in the building, and G. Scott Sr., that knows what his ceiling is. And he's nowhere near it professionally. Jackson, last year, got nowhere near, I think, the opportunity and the ceiling and the place.
There.
Yeah, I am, because they're going to put him in a position, right? This scheme and Ryan Grubb going into this thing is going to put these individuals in positions to really shine with their individual skill sets.
That'll be awesome, because he really is an exciting, fun player, and I like him a lot. So looking forward to seeing what that looks like this season. All right, coming up, as I said, in 20 minutes, a little more draft talk with Mark Domenech, former general manager of the Tampa Bay Bucks. He's going to join us in 20 after everything you need to know, including my response to this text message Maura sent me that won't leave my head. Thanks a lot, Maura. It's next on Brock and Salk.
need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
Well, Brock, just a couple days away from finally seeing what direction the Seahawks choose to go in this draft. They certainly have options. If they want to go offensive line, there are going to be some real good ones available at 16. If they want to go and help the defense up front, whether it be on the edge or in the middle, there are going to be some options there for them. And if they do decide they want to go quarterback, will Michael Penix be there? I think he will. Joel Klatt doesn't, but if he is...
Well, of course. And the only reason I didn't do that in my latest mock, which, by the way, comes out, it's out today, Joel Klatt's show. Nice. Just shameless plug. Don't worry about it. It's what us professionals do. I agree. I don't think he's going to be there. Okay. I really believe we're going to have all six of these guys taken before the Seattle pick.
All right. So he thinks the Seahawks should do it. Pull the trigger. Take Penix.
By the way, he's the guy. If I were to drop dead today,
yeah,
he's the guy that could work with you.
I could work with him every day.
Yes, you could.
I can't believe he's taking shots like that, though. That was calling me unprofessional.
It is sulky. It is all over the board. People tried to hammer back at me last night when I said, this is the most intrigued I have been in any draft. I think this is my 17th or 18th or so kind of being around it in the media. And there have been years the Seahawks have had top 10 picks. Certainly Pete Carroll's first one, you know, when you have a couple top 15 picks and how are they going to build this thing and all the background and the institutional knowledge he has on these college kids. Super, super intriguing. But with all the locals, with all the great human beings in this draft, with all the quarterbacks, there is not a Thursday in Detroit that I've looked to more than the one about 60 hours from right now.
It's going to be pretty fun. And as much as, you know, we kind of talked through all of these, the name I'll keep coming back to is Jared Verse. That's the one that I think would have me most excited. That's the one I'm secretly rooting for. Daniel Jeremiah on with Chris Long explains, well, why.
I know what Verse is. Like, Verse is a very distinct style. Like, he is rugged and rough, and he's just going to be a car crash. Like, that's what he's going to do. He's going to, I mean, like, to me, you look at some guys like Judon was kind of like that coming out. Like, he's just going to test your brakes every single rush. And that's what Verse, to be honest with you, Verse has a lot of similarities to Will Anderson. He's not as polished as Will Anderson was, but same build, same style. Hopefully, to me, like, a lot for him is going to be determined on where he goes. And how they, like, if you just let him play in that jet front and kick him out and give him a runway, like, he's going to be good, man. He's going to go right through dudes.
In the jet front, Brock.
Rugged, rough, car crash.
Right? Doesn't that sound pretty good? Doesn't that sound like exactly what Mike McDonald was just talking about in the thing I just read from John
rugged,
Boyle?
Rough, car
and
crash.
And a car crash. Yeah, that sounds pretty good.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
We're going to get a first real test for the Mariners. It starts tonight as they head into Texas to take on the Rangers in their first. It's crazy. We're almost at the end of April here. This is the first divisional matchup they will have had yet this season. But it'll be a good one. Jeff Passan joined us yesterday. We asked him what we should expect in this series.
I think at this point, you know, I look at series in the middle of the season not being indicative of a whole lot yet, right? Mm-hmm. To me, this is as much a psychological thing as it is, okay, like how is Logan Gilbert going to do against Dane Dunning, right? How is Bryce Miller going to do against John Gray? Like, we can look at the pitching matchups and all that, but to me, this is the world champions are playing against the Mariners. Let's see how they stack up. Let's see how the pitching navigates this lineup that has gotten even deeper than last season.
I think you know by now how I view Matt. Whatever, Jeff. My God, man. Tone it down.
But you don't get as many of them as you used to, Salk. It's later in the season to begin with for a divisional foe, and you don't have, with the balance now scheduling all across the league, you don't have as many of these marquee matchups.
And this is an opportunity against Texas while they're still beat up a little bit to, well,
there's
to do
no
some
DeGrom,
damage.
So, and there's no Scherzer, and their bullpen's
the series,
leaking oil.
Right.
And
does losing the series end your season? No. Does it tell you you're never going to catch them? No. But is it a little bit more of an opportunity than normal? Yeah, I would say it is. It's an opportunity to do something.
But does winning it and doing it with your elite pitching leave them like Cincinnati? like Colorado,
yeah,
like others that are going, I want no part of those arms.
Absolutely.
No, thank
you. And speaking of those matchups, Mariners will throw Logan Gilbert, Bryce Miller, Luis Castillo. Rangers counter with Dane Dunning, John Gray, Andrew Haney in that order.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
We are now sort of in the post-mortem phase for the Kraken as they're looking at what happened last year and how they can improve on it next season. Don't know yet what's going to go down with the coaching staff, as Ron Francis met the media yesterday and said that they're still in a consideration mode there. He went on to talk a little bit about what went wrong.
I think we were first in shooting percentage last year. This year we're 28th. We're fourth, I think, in goals for last year, and this year we're 29th. So that's an area we certainly have to look at, is to try and figure out why it didn't happen. And then, you know, there was some positives on the flip side. You know, the save percentage of goaltenders was better. You know, we're the only team that didn't make the playoffs whose defense is in the top 10. So defensively, we're solid, and we just have to find a way to score more goals. So I think that's a critical part to what we have to address here in the offseason.
Yeah, and if you're looking to try to figure out why, I mean, here's a good starting point. There's a bunch of reasons, but Moore sent this note over last night. Morgan Geeky, who they jettisoned in the offseason, scored 19 goals and had 20 assists. That's better than Matty Beniers did this year. Mm-hmm. Yes, that's a comment on Beniers, who did not have a good season. But Brock, when you look it up and realize that Geeky and Sprong accounted for 19 and 18 goals apiece last year, mm-hmm. or this past season, both of whom are in the postseason, and both of whom would have ranked third and fourth on the team in goals scored this year if they'd been here, that's not a good sign.
Okay, so what do you do now? I mean, that's all. Those are the facts. Those are the numbers. That's the data. We all watched a lot of it with our eyes this year. So what now? Is there going to be a scapegoat now? Do you have to point the finger somewhere now and make a change? Or is an unbelievably young organization 3 years in, do you want to try to keep continuity with your staff and with your coaching staff and make sure you now add some offensive firepower you desperately need?
I don't know that this is necessarily Dave Haxtell's fault, but I think that I would probably, if I were, and I don't know this for sure, but I think I'd probably be looking to do things a little bit differently.
Well, that's how that league operates. It is a quick turnover, quick hook, even for those that have resumes and have done some things in the league. So it's typically how it operates at that level.
All right, there you go. That's everything you need to know. Quarter past every hour here on the Brock and Salk Show. All right, it's been way too long since we've talked to Mark Dominic, who's a really fun guest. He does a great job talking football. He used to be the GM of the Bucks. He's going to join us in a moment. I also want to remind everyone to get ready to turn ahead the clock jersey night here. We can get ready to flip the clock at T-Mobile April 26th. And the 27th.
But that's not like flipping the clock, right?
No, okay. No, it's just what they're calling it. So on Friday the 26th, turn ahead the clock jersey night, Brock, with the first 15,000 fans scoring an iconic sleeveless jersey. Then the next night, you flip the clock back with 90s night neon caps. Wow. So make sure you're one of the first 10,000 fans through the gates and you can receive that. And a couple days after that, I'm going to be there with Cecily for Hello Kitty night. What do you think about that? That's right. Hello Kitty night coming up at the ballpark. So we can ask Mark Dominic about it. I'm sure he's a big fan. He will join us next. It's Brock and Salk, Seattle Sports on 710, seattlesports.com.
This is Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio. Weekdays 6 to 10.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Thursday's draft day. Thursday's race day. Obviously, you know that as well. Moore and I are getting ready for the big battle. Sounds like our location is all set. We're working on some of the filming. We do have to figure out a starter's pistol and some tape. So we'll have a little meeting after the show so we know exactly what we're doing. Brock, where do you plan to be for the race here?
At the finish.
You're going to stand at the finish.
Yeah, I guess. Or maybe I'll start you and then I'll sprint kind of across
the field.
Yeah. That's probably what I'll do.
Okay.
I'll probably start, sprint
in
across.
Both places.
I got to be involved in some way. I got to get my heart rate up.
Yes.
A little bit,
yeah. Brock's going to be so mad that other people are racing and he doesn't get to be a part of it. All he wants to do is race himself. All right. Well, after our stupid race, the Seahawks will finally get to figure out what they do at number 16. And to help us talk through that draft, Mark Dominic, former Bucks GM, of course, and now a Sirius XM. And it's been way too long since he's been on this show. Mark, thanks for being here. We appreciate it.
Yeah, glad to be on. Can't believe we're that close to the finish line or the beginning line of the draft, which, again, just seems like it sneaks up every year, but it's going to be an exciting weekend, that's for sure.
When you were doing this, you know, for the Bucks, as you were 2 days out, Did you feel at that point like, all right, I kind of know what I'm doing here. Like, I know everything. These last couple of days are unnecessary. Or are you just sort of still scrambling like, well, I got to get a few more evaluations done. I got to know a few more scenarios. I got to set up a few more trades. What is that like?
Yeah, so it's really, you pretty much have a good sense of what you're going to do round one, round two. After that, you really don't. Depending on where your pick is in round two. And you don't have to worry about it, right? Because we have, you know, Friday to, you know, kind of get everything resettled after Thursday night's first round. But you definitely have a game plan in mind. I think right now what you're doing is just kind of reconfirming, you know, if I want to trade here, this is what I'd be willing to give up. If I want to make a move back, this is what I'd be willing to take. And doing it with a sound mind instead of trying to think about it like two picks before your draft or on the clock and suddenly the Dallas Cowboys call, what are you going to do? Like, no, it's like, I already thought about this, and this is what I'm going to do, and this is what we're going to do, and this is the plan. And then you lay it out in front of the ownership as well. A lot of times this is when they would just kind of want to get an overall sense of, like, what's the problem? What are you thinking about? You know, that kind of things. But it's mainly the hay is in the barn, and if you're tweaking something, it's very minimal.
Mark, you think this will look and feel any different to any of us being the first draft without Pete Carroll next to John Schneider?
Yeah, right. It's certainly going to be a different feel and a different look. I mean, you know, it's a tandem that has been together for such a long time and had wonderful success. And yet I have complete confidence in John Schneider, known him forever. I know you guys know him very well, too. He's a fantastic listener, and I think that makes a very good GM. And that's what John does well. So I'm looking forward to seeing this one with Coach McDonald and bringing his mentality from Baltimore, which has done a great job of drafting over the years, too. If you look at just their first round success, it's been significant, and which has kept them very relevant every year as well. So it'll be a nice combination to see these two working together.
I'm so glad you used that word listener. And I want to follow up on a little bit. What does that mean? And especially, like, how does that play its way out in the draft room? And especially in working with a new coach where you've got to get players that fit what it is he's looking for. How does that play its way out?
Yeah, that's exactly right. And I think you're nailing it with a new coach and, you know, staff included, for the most part. And so what you want to do as a GM right now is you just need to direct them and talk to them about, like, what does each position look like? Tell me why. Why is Kyle Hamilton a good pick for you guys? What, you know, I know he was taller, he didn't run as fast, but what was it about Kyle that you liked about his game? But take me through your offense, take me through your defense. And now the hard thing you have to do is you have to sit there and say, hey, look, you're going to build this. Let's go defense because it's Coach McDonald. You're going to build this defense from scratch and you've got 11 players. All right, and I'm going to give you a nickel corner because I think nickel corners are that important. So you got 11 players, so it's going to take probably one linebacker off the field, or maybe I'll give you 12 players. You can have the nickel corner. Let's do it that way. And so now I want you to rank what's the number if you could pick one player on the entire defense that you had to have, what positions you play, and go through that through 1 through 12. And that way I know that maybe strong safety and Sam backer or depending on your scheme, maybe when your inside backers isn't as important, or maybe your defensive, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And it's hard, right? They have to sit there and tell you, like, what's most important. And then what you do, once you see that, because that's going to help you make decisions on draft day, and then you kind of look at what your club looks like, you have a conversation about the players. Oh, you say that this guy could kind of fit into that mold. Do you mean that Boye Mafe is kind of the outside linebacker you're looking for, or are you still looking for more of the Darryl Taylor? You know, what do you want? And then you have to break down the traits within that player. And this is why you have to listen. You have to be willing to ask all these questions to get a sense, because when you're in the fifth round, yeah, we all might want another corner, and we don't want to sacrifice size. So we're going to sacrifice speed and maybe some shorter quickness, but we're not going to sacrifice a 5'8 guy. We're not always going to go 6'1". And so you just listen to those things and take it all in as you learn what this new coach wants and in this new system that they want.
He is Mark Dominic, former Bucks GM, now on Sirius Radio, NFL Radio. You'll hear him all over this draft as well. So knowing that and listening to everything you said right there, here's a little bit of the Ravens way. Here's a little bit of John Schneider's way. They blend those two things together. Give me a couple players that you think fit both of those molds pretty darn well in this draft.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's still, you guys are big time sleepers at the quarterback spot. I'm sure you probably talk about it all the time in terms of who might be the quarterback for your Seattle Seahawks. I think they're the sleeper team that's just, you know, being quiet and maybe make a move. I know that's not usually what John does, but I think he's one of those ones that, you know, makes a move and puts himself in position to go get the quarterback. So I think, you know, when you see these quarterbacks fall, you know, what could they do with it? I think that's one thing I would sit there and look at. I think that there's a lot of different guys that you could go towards. But I think when you, I think that they're going to sit there and look at the secondary of this football team and know that Devon Witherspoon has been so good and so productive. That's been really impressive. And so when you see all those things with what they've already got, I think that they're going to continue to focus on offensive line. They'll continue to focus on the secondary, and I think that's going to be the two areas you're going to see them do it.
Well, since you mentioned quarterback, and as you know, we are sports radio hosts. You just essentially dangled catnip in front of our noses by mentioning the quarterback position. We probably spent more time in our 15 years on the air together talking right. about that than anything else or any 10 other subjects combined. Mark, let's talk about these quarterbacks, and if you believe there is one, I remember John telling us years ago, he's only drafted two quarterbacks here in Seattle, Russell Wilson and Alex Magoo. And he told us years ago, he's looking for a quarterback that tilts the field, that tilts the room, that has a presence that changes everything for a franchise. Who in this draft changes everything for a franchise?
Yeah, these quarterbacks, you got to swing and try to hit. And, you know, you've got the Caleb Williams, the Drake Mays, the Jaden Daniels, who are, you know, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Drake May. I think J.J. McCarthy does go in front of Michael Penix, and I think Michael's the fifth guy. And then I think you're talking about Bo Nix. Does he sneak in here or does he not? And my gut instinct is I don't think he goes in the first round, but it's going to be close. There's so many good players at other positions that it's going to be hard to do this. But I think that this is where, as you guys know, when you're playing in the division and you're looking at that position, I think the best way I can explain it is when I was in Tampa, we drafted a young quarterback named Josh Freeman, who was supremely talented, on the field, and kind of fell a little bit off the field. That's kind of hurt his career. But even though I had a young quarterback who had great numbers his second year, like fabulous NFL numbers, I still had to beat Drew Brees, Cam Newton, and Matt Ryan. Right. And so it's like, I realized that I still have probably the fourth best quarterback in our division. And that's really brutal. And so when you look at where Seattle is, it doesn't mean anything against Geno. It's just the fact that, hey, look, we might have the fourth best quarterback in this division and we've got to swing at it. And, you know, you might not be picking 16 next year or in that kind of spot. So I think that that's going to be where I think that they're going to let the draft come to them. I don't think they're going to go make the move to go get it, but I certainly think that they're sleepers with those two fours or maybe that third where they can go make a move. But I think you could take any one of those five and make a case for them being a franchise opportunity for your football team.
You think all of the background that Ryan Grubb has, Scott Huff has, the OC, the O-line coach, they were just with Penix the last couple of years. Do you think that gives them an inherent advantage in the evaluation?
Yeah, I think it does. Just like I think it's interesting for Harbaugh to have John Alt, right? And like he knows that kid inside and out and everything about him. And so I think it's the same thing. I think it's very helpful. When you bring in coaches from the college ranks, basically even more so over this last year versus any other time with the NIL and the portal, these guys know so many players and so much background. They are a wealth. They're like even more probably deeper into these players than even the college scouts who've been sitting there for all year watching them. These guys know them and lived with them. So I think it's definitely going to sway, and that's where you've got to listen. That's where John Schneider's got to get a sense of, you know, is Penix the guy that we think – because it's all about the health for Penix, right? I mean, it depends if you can – you like left-handed quarterbacks. That's a separate argument.
I do. I love them.
Yeah, Brock's kind of a fan for whatever reason. Yeah.
I could say yes. Might be a fan. I love him. But – you know, John, so I was with Coach Gruden. Coach Gruden hated left-handed quarterbacks, yeah, right? So it's just, it was ugly. It was a bad match. funny, but I mean, for Michael Penix, I mean, you just got to get over the medical, and what your doctors tell you about that is basically going to be how you handle him. And so if Michael Penix is a guy that you feel like can play in the National League because your doctors who you hired say, hey, look, we think he's going to be fine, boom, you could take him there. If not, then, you know, because of all the season injuries. And I loved the letter that Michael Penix penned. I thought that was really smart by him to kind of put it out there and say, I don't know what else to do other than let's go. So I think that's going to be interesting. But, you know, I think that Michael's a really good player. But I think having that knowledge from those college coaches is a big piece of the puzzle here.
Can you help out my poor friend Brock? Because he should love Michael Penix.
I should.
He should be leading the train in favor of a left-handed UW quarterback. Mm-hmm. This should be the most obvious thing in the world. And I don't think it's the medicals for Brock. I don't think it's the issues.
It's not looking back. It's projecting ahead.
It's trying to figure out what that body looks like in the NFL.
I just have concerns about the sustainability and the durability, those abilities. Nothing with the arm, nothing with the brain, nothing with the talent, nothing with the accuracy. All of it is franchise worthy. I just have a question about not even the past injuries, Mark, but just projecting. Can you remember guys in your years where it wasn't even their past injuries, it was projecting ahead and going, geez, I just don't know if this body type can sustain the kind of beating you're going to take in the NFL.
I think you think about that. Yeah, I think you think about that a lot. I know I did or do think about that a lot in terms of, you know, can you take the player that you're worried is going to get hit? You got to say the past has to mean something or there's no reason to talk about it. And I think that's where, you know, as you know, Brock, that, you know, with Penix, it's a lot easier not being the team that picks him and go, well, yeah, take him. Of course you would. And then something goes wrong, right? Because you're the one getting fired. And so it's a little bit different to be on the sideline saying, yeah, well, you definitely take this guy. He's got everything. You have to be comfortable. And Penix used to be able to run and things like that. And now he's a pocket passer. And, you know, does he have awareness in the pocket? I think so. But I do think that it's fair for you to sit there and say, you know, there should be some bit of pause, some bit of like, you know, the past means something, but at this, it's really hard. And this is where it goes back to this conversation. You hire your orthopedic doctors and staff and your training staff to be experts in their area. And you have to decide internally, if you're John Schneider or whoever, whether you're going to listen to it or not. Bill Belichick, he was like, I don't really care. You know, it's like, thanks for the information. I'm still going to draft guys. Now, I have two prime examples of both ways. Number one, you know, sadly, I think this is probably the hardest one, but, you know, back when Rob Gronkowski came out, we failed him on his back. We had a D-minus medical. And so we took him from, you know, being a mid upper first to mid second rounder to like fifth or sixth round. Well, should have taken Gronkowski. That one would have been really good. But we also had a kid named Javid Best, who was at Cal, the running back, who had, you know, multiple concussions. And our doctor's like, no, can't take him. They went back and watched the injuries there too. And they can't take him. And he's out of the league in 2 years. And so you just got to decide where you're going to draw the line. Now that I'm older and kind of looking back, I think I'd take the shot on a guy, especially at the quarterback position, just because I don't know how much time you have to be the GM and the head coach, and you've got to have that position. You got to swing at it. And I think you got to explain it to ownership ahead of time. Hey, we realize that there's a landmine here, a pitfall. So that's where I say, Seattle, I don't think you've got to go make the move to get Penix. If he comes to you, great. And then you've got to make that big decision. Schneider has to make it, but I don't think you go and get that guy.
All right, so let's back away from the quarterbacks for a moment. We're talking to Mark Dominic, who, Brock, shame on both of us for not having him on more, because I just really enjoyed talking to
him. Well, I've wanted him like 10 different times,
that's
and you're like,
not
no,
true. You're
no.
You're such a liar. No. How dare you? that's just not right. See, this
that
is what
actually
he does.
Isn't
he
true. That's not true.
Like this all the
okay,
time.
That is a total lie. Oh, I'll God. Own that. I'm sorry.
Look, can you give me some capsules? I'm going to give you four names of players that we've talked about quite a bit here. That are away from the quarterback position that could be a fit at number 16. Let me start with Jared Verse.
Yeah, Jared Verse, I love his athleticism. I thought he tested better than what I thought he played on film, which is always a little bit of a concern because I didn't feel like he was going to test that well, and he ran really good and moved around well. He's an unbelievable competitor and a great kid, like a home run as a young man off the field. So you feel very comfortable with all those things you could check off the box. I think you get versatility. You're going to get a guy that I think can play outside and inside and rush the passer. You know, might not be as powerful as Draymond Jones, but might be a little more elusive an athlete. But I mean, I like him as a comparison, but I think Draymond's a little bit longer and more powerful, where Verse is a little more athletic and a little more bendy.
How about Byron Murphy?
I think he's a stud. I love this player. I think he's got quick twitch. He's got different rush moves. He certainly can beat you inside on one-on-ones, but he's also able to get small and skinny and split double teams and create a lot of problems. You know, it's interesting. I always felt like this league has never valued TFLs the way it should. TFLs are sacks. And until we start to look at TFLs as the same as sacks and start to like really, you know, support that, I think this guy's a TFL monster, and I think he can be a good sacker. I think he's going to go, though. I think he's the first defensive player off the board.
How about Latu?
Latu, it goes back to the other stuff, right? In terms of a guy that's got a plan and is a rusher, I think he might be the best rusher in this draft class because, you know, not only did he do it in college, but then he went to the Senior Bowl and put on a clinic there for a little bit too. So he's just goes back down to the medical too. If you're comfortable enough with the medical, you take this guy and you don't think twice about it because I think you're getting the best pure outside pass rusher in this draft class.
Troy Fautanu would be the last one.
Who'd you say? I'm sorry. It went out.
Sorry. Troy Fautanu from Washington here.
Sure. So Troy, I like Troy. Okay. I think he's kind of at a different level than those guys. You know, I think he's kind of more of a mid round type of guy that's going to, you're going to be able to plug and play him and he's going to be able to find a role, but I don't see him as a guy that you're going to put up there in the early rounds whatsoever. I think he's going to be more mid round, late round.
Interesting. All right. Well, so there you go, Brock.
Well, last thing for me here is, what do you think ultimately Schneider does tomorrow or Thursday night? Ultimately, he's got new people around him, right? Ultimately, he's kind of the last one standing between he and Pete and everything else. If you could guess and take a swing at what's going to happen in the war room Thursday night with John at 16, you think he makes a pick? You think he trades down? Or in any realm, if Penix is sitting there at 13, 14, he trades up?
I don't think he trades up. I think if Penix makes it through the gauntlet, guys, that picks the 11, 12, 13 with the Vikings and the Raiders, the Raiders and the Broncos. If Penix makes it through, I think you just sit and wait and see if he comes at you. That's where I see that one. Where I see them doing is I think that they're going to stick with probably the defensive side of the ball, continue to get bigger, more physical pass rushers. As much as I like William Mafe and Daryl Taylor, I think that they're going to be looking for another guy that can rush the passer because that's just kind of what you've been doing for years. And I would expect that that's kind of where they're written. And I think that's where Latte comes into play, right? I think that's a real possibility there. I think you brought up Burse, who's a possibility there. So I think that speed rusher is kind of in that realm of where they go. I also think that because the tackles are so good, you know, I love Charles Cross, Abraham Lucas, I think that there's a chance third round, you're going to look at them going back in the offensive line again because John's been getting better and better at drafting offensive line, and I think that'll be a big thing. Now, when you said, and I apologize, when you were talking about your big offensive lineman, I was thinking I was getting mixed up.
I had a feeling that was the case. I didn't want to call it. I was like, there's no way he thinks Troy Fautanu is a third-round pick, so I'm just going to let it go, and we'll clear it up later. I figured.
With defensive players, and I couldn't get it out of my head, and I'm like, what are you doing, Mark? Like, you're completely killing yourself. And no, he's a stud. Like he's going to go in the first round for sure. I literally am talking and I'm like, did I just actually say 30? Yeah. So I apologize. Everybody that they can turn back in or tune back on.
Yes.
But no, that guy's an absolute beast. And he's absolutely going the first round. Are you kidding? He's a stud.
So what do you do? And if you're sitting there at 16 and Fautanu versus Latu are all there.
Penix.
Penix. What do you do?
Okay. So if your coach is comfortable, you take the quarterback and you just swing the bat. Okay. Just because you have to. And again, Brock knows where I sit on Penix. I see Penix more as a late first, early second type of guy, not so much as a mid, but you're not going to get another pick. You're Seattle. You don't have a second, right?
Right.
I think he can go play a guard, right? You can put him inside a guard easily and he could be dominating that guard. And so I feel really good about that. And I think that really kind of solidifies your offensive line. I know Bradford can do a little bit of things, but I mean, I think that really gives you one of the best offensive lines, maybe in the AFC, when you start to add those guys all together with the consistency of Lakeland Tomlinson, which I think he'll bring. My gut instinct, you go quarterback. I'm a believer quarterback, protect the quarterback, attack the quarterback. That's my fundamental philosophy. So I would take the tackle. I would take Troy if I don't take Penix.
Well, at least we know we're not having to wait to the third round for it. I'm glad we cleared
that
up.
That'd have been a good pick. You'd be getting a good A in my post-draft. You're like, wow, I got him in the third. Who saw it?
Yes.
Mark, when he goes 14th.
Yeah, seriously. Well, thank you. This is awesome.
Sorry about that.
No, you're just fine. We totally get it. There's
only
so many names.
10,000 names in your head. Right? So, yeah, totally understand.
I mean. And by the way, make the mistake here in Seattle today, not on draft day, right? Like, this is the time to kind of get some of those bugs out so that this is a little practice warm-up for you. When you get to Thursday, you're going to be good to go.
Yeah, I got a lot of good radio on Thursday, so it'll be a lot of fun. It's going to be great to be in Detroit and watch the draft. It's always fun to go to the town that's hosting the draft, especially when they have a later pick. It's maybe time for Seattle to get the draft at some point here soon.
Well, we're in. Yeah, yes. Please speak. Yes. Talk that up, because we would we would love to host the draft here in Seattle. Mark, we appreciate it. Brock, please don't wait so long to have him back. This was a lot of fun. Mark Dominic, thank you so much. We'll talk again.
You bet, guys. I'm the Troy Fan Club. Don't worry about it.
There you go. There's Mark Dominic, former GM, of course, with the Bucks, and now doing his work with SiriusXM. Been with ESPN for a while as well. I'm glad he cleared that up. I had a feeling. I even said to Maura in the little talk back, I was like, I think he must have got the wrong guy. There's no way he heard me right. That's just not right.
See, I have an inherent advantage that I get to see a lot of these guys and say the name Latu. Liatu Latu. Mm-hmm. And I had to say it in the mirror about 100 times before a UCLA game, right? Or Troy Fautanu. Or Latuli Nasanoa. Tuli Latuli Nasanoa. So you kind of work through all those names.
About who was the guy yesterday?
Something like that. Yes. You know, and poor Mark's got a gazillion names floating through his head. AFC, NFC, NFC, anything else. But I think you hear bottom line is a guy that was in that seat. Got fired from that job, right? Like most GMs, there's 100% fire rate. Most GMs don't retire on their own. They get terminated at some point because they swing and they miss. And I think you hear further ammunition right there for some of those out there, like, oh, I don't know, Zach and Pialup or Bob and Buckley that want Michael Penix, that if you're there, you've got to swing at the quarterback.
Well, isn't that kind of what I was saying?
It's exactly.
If you believe he's that guy, then you take him. If you
don't,
it's
exactly what you've said.
If you don't believe Michael Penix is that guy, I have no problems with that. If you're worried about injury, if you were worried about throwing on the run, body type, whatever the case may be, if you don't think he's a franchise quarterback, then forget it. Go do the other thing.
Yes.
But if you actually think he's your franchise guy, you're foolish not to take him.
You know where I get uncomfortable in these situations? I get uncomfortable, like my father-in-law, with have-tos. Well, you have to do this. You just have to swing. You have to do that. You have to make this move. It's like Molly will tell me sometimes, like, you just have to pay this. I'm like, why do I have to pay this? I like to get, I don't know.
Taxes is taxes.
Not taxes. No. You have to pay. Yes, you have to pay your taxes. I'm talking about, like, how is this possible that these drawers cost as much money. Like, that's what the market
is. They cost.
That's what you have to pay for good quality. Like,
if you believe he's a franchise quarterback, of course you take him at 16. Are you kidding? It's a steal at twice the price. If he's not, then you move on and you go after one of these other guys. And my gut tells me that they don't think he's that sure bet, that he's just not a surefire franchise quarterback.
That's what your gut tells you about who?
About Schneider. Gut tells me that Schneider doesn't believe that Michael Penix is that guy. I have no information. It's not a report. It's just my gut, which is why my gut tells me either he trades down or he goes with one of the guys we've been talking about or somebody that we've never heard of at number 16. But if you do believe he's a true franchise guy, of course, you do everything in your power to go get him. And quite frankly, I would hope that if he believed J.J. McCarthy or any of these other guys were franchise guys, that he tried everything in his power to get up high enough to get one of them and unfortunately just fell short, which is why he ultimately went and got Sam Howell just to cover the rear end.
Agreed.
So I would assume that's the direction this goes. But we'll
I loved so much of that, like the listening end of that, the medical end of that. It's a reminder, like we see John and we listen to him. Last week we got to hear from his top four lieutenant, Salk. But some of, like, the most important pieces, you don't always know. Mm-hmm. And some of those medical people behind the scenes, you know, they're not the only ones that are getting a little nervous before the war room and draft day.
All right, let's take a quick break. Brock, we only have two final draft profiles.
Yeah. I made an audible.
What?
I made an audible.
Already?
An audible.
You can't audible the final
two. Easy, Black, 24, okay!
It's coming up next. I'm Brock and Salk.